Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, March 16th, 2026. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. ICE arrests up in Central Washington Agricultural Region. Idaho Senate Committee kills bill that would have required local law enforcement agencies across the state to apply for ICE programs. Candidate filings for Latah County seats ended on Friday. Longtime Democratic Commissioner Tom Lamar not running for re-election. And flooding hits the Palouse over the weekend. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. The Idaho Senate State Affairs Committee Monday morning killed a bill from Republican Representative Dale Hawkins of Fernwood that would have required all local law enforcement agencies to apply to enter into agreements with ICE. House Bill 659 would have required all city and county law enforcement agencies to apply for the federal 287G program, which is run by ICE. The bill had already passed the House on a 41-27 vote. The 5-4 vote in committee came after opposition from county sheriffs in southern Idaho. Republican Senator Brian Lenny of Nampa sponsored the bill on the Senate side.
Illegal immigration enforcement is only a federal issue. I would say to tell that to the worker who just lost his job, to illegal labor, to a parent who lost their child to fentanyl that was trafficked over the border, to the family that had to bury their child because an illegal alien decided to get behind the wheel and drive. We could go on and on and on. This problem exists in Idaho jails, in our cities, in our living rooms, and our morgues. So 659 does two things, essentially two things. It requires local law enforcement to apply for available 287G agreements with ICE, and I'll get into what that means. And then if they apply for an agreement and that for some reason they can't come to an understanding, it requires them to post publicly why that agreement didn't work. So this doesn't create a new task force or a new agency or anything like that. And technically doesn't even require participation by local law enforcement with ICE. This is just a mandate to apply. As of today, the stats might have changed since I woke up this morning, but ICE has signed 1,517 MOAs for 287G programs covering 39 states and two U.S. territories, including several here in Idaho. We currently have one in five counties in Idaho are currently doing this voluntarily. I believe there's eight sheriff's departments who have signed this type of agreement with ICE, including the Idaho State Police have a 287G agreement that was mandated by Governor Little recently. So here's 287G. That's just a section in code. Here's what this actually means. And there's some handouts that are, I think, walk you through it pretty simply. There's three models. So you apply for this essentially partnership with ICE, and you can choose one or all three of these models. There's the jail enforcement model, which is designed to identify and process removable illegal aliens with criminal or pending criminal charges who are already in jail. So the jail enforcement model has to do with people who are – they've already been arrested. They're already in the jail. We're not going out and – this doesn't mean our local law enforcement goes out and does raids and things like that. There's the warrant service officer program that essentially lets our local law enforcement just serve a warrant to somebody who's already arrested. They're already in jail. They've already been booked. So instead of having to have ICE come down and literally hand them a piece of paper, the warrant, it just says, hey, our local law enforcement can serve warrants. It's pretty easy. They just give them a piece of paper. And then the third one, which is interesting, is the task force model. And that's exactly what it sounds like. It serves as a force multiplier for law enforcement agencies to enforce limited immigration authority with ICE oversight during their routine duties. So with the task force model, they can participate in an ICE-led operation in their local area. That's part of it. They don't have to. They can choose to. And it also lets them kind of put on their immigration hat during local, you know, routine stops and things like that. So there's three models that it essentially covers. Florida is a great state. If you want to say, well, what would this look like if we implemented it statewide? Well, Florida did implement it statewide. And the Florida Sheriff's Association did not resist it. They actually led the charge to do this. And they, as of February 2025, the Florida Sheriff's Association said they have complete, full, statewide compliance with 287G. Again, every agency picks their own model. They're not forced to participate, but they can if they would like to.
However, under the proposed Idaho law, law enforcement agencies would have been forced to apply for ICE's 287G program. Here's some of the testimony in the Senate State Affairs Committee Monday morning.
My name is Mary Brown, and I'm here today in my personal capacity as a Boise resident in opposition of House Bill 659. I'm also here with my two-year-old daughter because it's spring break and I don't have childcare. And while I would much rather be spending time with her than be here testifying, this bill is so important that I thought it was necessary to show up. One of my concerns is that the bill removes local control. Decisions about whether to participate in federal enforcement programs should be made locally based on community needs, staffing, and public safety priorities. I'm also concerned about the strain that would be placed on local law enforcement. Every hour that officers spend enforcing federal immigration is an hour that they're not responding to calls, investigating crimes, or serving the people who live here. I've heard lawmakers say that the immigration bills proposed this session address a human rights issue. If we're going to talk about human rights, we should also consider the impact that expanded immigration has had across our country. People afraid to call police, children afraid to go to school, and families separated. When policies create this level of fear in everyday life, we should ask ourselves if they truly protect human rights or if they undermine them. As a Boise resident, I don't want our local police policing people's immigration status. Being undocumented is not a crime, and legal status is far harder to access than people acknowledge. I want my daughter to grow up in a community where all of her neighbors are treated with dignity and where local police are focused on protecting everyone who lives here. For these reasons, please, please reject this bill.
I don't see any questions. Your daughter is very cute, by the way.
Thank you.
Thank you for taking the time to come in. Senator Adams, did you have? You good? Sorry, I missed you. Sheriff Kieran Donahue. Welcome to committee, Sheriff. Introduce yourself, who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sheriff Kieran Donahue, County County Sheriff, and I represent the Idaho Sheriff's Association. The sheriffs are absolutely opposed to this bill. As you all know, the sheriffs are constitutional officers. This bill attempts to mandate what a sheriff shall or shall not do. And that is truly, in our opinion, overreach of the legislative body. The federal government has their job and we have our job. And contrary to some beliefs, we have a tremendous working relationship with ICE across this state. There's not a jail or a sheriff that I'm aware of who does not participate working with ICE under the guidelines that are already set in motion, which is to have them come and interview and serve papers on people that we have in custody once we've made contact with them. The cost is purely significant because when we talk about sending people out on a task force model or a jail model, we have to send officers to the task force, and we have to send them for training if they're going to be working in the jail. We have to backfill those people. We have to pay overtime for those people. If we send them to a task force, I was a task force officer with the FBI, we lose those people from our patrol division. They are tasked out to ICE. They don't just come and go as they please. They are tasked out for periods of time. Those are very significant. It's been mentioned that ISP does this. ISP simply does transport. They do not do enforcement of ICE. The sheriffs, have such a great working relationship. We do not see why this would be important to do so, to have us be mandated to do it. This whole thing seems like a solution looking for a problem that simply does not exist in this state. I know other states do it. I know sheriffs voluntarily set up to do so. Let them continue to volunteer to work with ICE, cooperatively as we have been doing. I'll stand for any questions.
Not sure who was first. Let's go with Senator Shippey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Sheriff Donahue. Thank you for being in committee. It was mentioned earlier that this is an increase of revenue for sheriff's departments. Do you feel that that is a correct assessment?
Sheriff Donahue.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Senator Shippey, I do not. This is not a revenue generator. This is a cost. When you talk about the overtime being paid specifically to a task force model officer, yes, they may receive a vehicle. They may receive overtime salary, that type of salary, the overtime costs. That's revenue. But the cost is that I've lost those officers from my workforce. I have taken them off the patrol division, and the young lady who just spoke from Boise, talking about local law enforcement, we have a plethora of jobs that we shall and must do every single day, both through the Constitution and legislative mandates. When we take those officers off the streets to go out and enforce illegal immigration, we have lost them to do traffic stops, respond to injuries, respond to domestic violence, respond to robberies, etc., etc., etc. So there's an ongoing cost. When we look at the jail model, if I'm to send officers out, I would have to send at least 2 to 3 officers per team. Four teams of our jails. We have to have four teams to operate 365 days a year and night. I have to take them out of my workforce. I have to pay for them to go get that training. The training's free, but not the travel, not the lodging, not the per diem. That's a cost to the county. And when we say it's a cost to the county, it's a cost to the taxpayer. Additionally, if I have to backfill to cover those teams in the jail, if I can find anyone, and most all of us are very tight on manpower, if I can find someone, I have to pay overtime for them to cover those shifts. So you can see the costs continue to just multiply. There's a cascading effect here that I don't believe has been discussed in the past.
Follow-up? Yeah, just one quick follow-up. Sheriff, did the sponsors of this legislation approach you, seek to work with you or the Idaho Sheriff's Association in developing this legislation?
Sheriff Donahue.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Shippey, we have spoken to them in person. We have testified in the House side. They did not come to us to develop this legislation.
Senator Ruckey.
Well, Mr. Chairman, all my questions have now been answered by Sheriff Donahue. It was very thorough. Thank you.
I thought I saw a light down yonder, but no. Senator Adams.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One quick question. Sheriff Donahue, you referred to the lady that testified before, and I just want to clarify, since you're the chief law enforcement officer in my county, is being an undocumented immigrant a crime in the United States?
Sheriff Donahue.
Mr. Chairman. Senator Adams, it is unlawful for a person who is not here legally to enter the country or the state.
Thank you.
Don't see any other questions. Thank you, Sheriff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Morgan Bayless. If I didn't get that last name quite right, just correct me in your name and who you represent. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, Committee, Morgan Bayless. Sheriff, Blaine County Sheriff's Office. I want to talk about the difference between the spirit of the law and the letter of the law. The spirit of this law is very clear. Cooperation with ICE for immigration enforcement protects our communities. We want criminals out of Idaho, out of the United States, but also, especially with the sheriffs that operate jails, it's important to maintain that cooperation because it prevents ICE from going into our communities. When they can take direct custody from our jails, it mitigates the need for them to go into their communities, increase fear and anxiety. That's the spirit of this law. The sheriffs across Idaho support the spirit of the law. The letter of the law, however, is very different, and I draw you to lines 39 and 40. There's been a lot of discussion about that this bill just requires us to submit an application. That's half true. Lines 39 and 40 are very clear. Law enforcement agencies shall participate in any future program or successor to an existing program. This does not differentiate between whether or not you already have a 287G agreement or if you do not. What does that mean? I'll present you with two hypothetical situations. there is a nexus between firearms trafficking, firearms going from the United States to Mexico to support cartels, transnational crime organizations, and the nexus between that and human trafficking. Any administration could have our officers under this program, a new future program, now enforcing federal firearms law, which completely contradicts current state law. The other issue, it was brought up that under Biden's open borders, well, a future president could create a program that now requires officers to go to the border to support mass immigration. You are writing a blank check under this legislation for the federal deputization of every law enforcement agency in the state without knowing what these programs are. And I'm happy to stand for any questions.
Are there questions? Senator Adams.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for being here in committee and for your testimony. So you really focused on lines 39 through 40. If that section of "and shall participate in any future program or successor to an existing program," if that was no longer in the legislation, would that change the position of who I believe is FOP?
Sheriff?
Mr. Chair, Sheriff. Senator, Sheriff Morgan Ballas, Blaine County Sheriff's Office in ISA.
Yeah, go ahead. Would that change your position if that section was taken out?
Sure.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I think it would go a long way. This is the issue with not coming to local law enforcement agencies to help write this legislation. We believe in state sovereignty. We believe in the constitutional protected office of the sheriff. This line is an issue. And it doesn't matter what party you're with or where you stand on illegal immigration in general. We do not want to write a blank check to every single future president on how they want to dispose of our officers. There was discussion about Florida's bill. Florida's bill is specific to the jail enforcement model, so only sheriffs that operate jails. There's 44 sheriffs in Idaho, 36 operate jails. Every single one of them fully participate with ICE. Some have 287G agreements, some don't.
The committee voted against an amendment that would have removed the language that would have required all Idaho law enforcement to participate in all future versions of federal immigration enforcement. With the 5-4 committee vote against House Bill 659, the bill is effectively dead for this year's legislative session.
CAREFP is supported by listeners like you and Rembrandt Tree Care, family-owned and operated since 1977. A conscientious approach to urban forestry with year-round tree service on the Palouse and surrounding areas. You can reach Rembrandt Tree Care at 509-330-0699.
KRFP thanks all of its donors and underwriters for helping make this programming possible.
The University of Washington Center for Human Rights has released data on the number of ICE arrests around the state, and the number shows big spikes over the last year and a disproportionate number of ICE arrests per capita in central Washington's agricultural areas, which depend on migrant labor for harvests. The Seattle Times reported Yakima County had the highest number of ICE arrests per capita last year, with 185 arrests per 100,000 people. Franklin County had the second highest per capita ICE arrests. The total number of ICE arrests in Franklin County was 66. The Tri-Cities Herald reported nearby Benton County had a huge spike in the number of ICE arrests in the second part of the year, bringing their total to 60 for 2025. King County had the highest number of ICE arrests overall in Washington last year at 1,030, and Yakima County was second with 477. King County has 10 times the population as Yakima County does. Spokane County, with an overall population of 550,000 people, had 83 ICE arrests last year. Clark County in southwestern Washington, which includes the city of Vancouver, has had a similar population as Spokane County, just over 500,000, and it had 132 ICE arrests.
Agricultural runoff is a leading cause of water pollution in Idaho and the U.S., yet the large industrialized dairies and feedlots that contribute to it often go unchecked. Groups voicing concerns about the industry say many don't have permits required by the Clean Water Act. Attorney Brian Hurlbut with Advocates for the West says Idaho has 274 confined animal feeding operations, or CAFOs. He says none of them have these permits.
Potentially, some of the CAFOs in Idaho aren't discharging any pollution to any neighboring water bodies, but the idea that all 274 of them are not, or that even a significant number of them are not, is pretty preposterous.
The Environmental Protection Agency considers CAFOs source point polluters, meaning they send pollution into rivers using pipes, ditches, or other channels. These operations must get Clean Water Act permits before discharging pollutants into bodies of water. Hurlbut says CAFOs often get away without permits because state environmental quality departments and the EPA haven't aggressively enforced the requirement. Hurlbut says another loophole for CAFOs is protection from trade secret laws in Idaho and other states.
Citizens are not able to get a lot of the documents that these CAFOs produce about how they store and manage and handle all of their manure and what happens with it.
Hurlbut believes water quality monitoring will get even worse under the Trump administration, which has already proposed narrowing the types of streams and wetlands the Clean Water Act will protect. He wants the public to understand how big this issue is and how agriculture has changed in the past few decades.
While there certainly are still smaller family farms, a lot of this pollution is being driven by big ag and huge corporations that are taking advantage of the places where they're operating.
The Trump administration contends limiting protections for streams and wetlands would reduce the regulatory burden on landowners and allow for economic growth. I'm Laura Hatch, Northern Rockies News Service.
The filing period for county and local elections ended Friday afternoon in Idaho. The filing period for state legislative elections and federal elections in Idaho was held earlier in February. The major news for the filings of Latah County Commission candidates is Democratic Commissioner Tom Lamar, who has represented District 2 since first being elected in 2014, is not running for re-election. With 12 years on the commission, Lamar is the longest-serving commission member and is the only Democratic county commissioner in northern Idaho, a part of the state that currently has no Democrats elected to the state legislature. Lamar is serving with two Republican commissioners, Tony Johnson from District 1 and Jason Stukes from District 3. In county commission elections, the districts are for candidate pools only, and all Latah County voters can cast ballots in every county commission race. The candidates for Lamar's seat this year are Democrat Lori Heinze and Republican Dan Schoenberg. Schoenberg is co-owner of Palouse Properties and chair of the Latah County Republican Party. Under Schoenberg's chairmanship, the county Republican Party leadership has shifted to the far right, and the county party central committee in 2023 voted to sanction Republican District 6 Representative Lori McCann of Lewiston for not voting right-wing enough in the legislature. The winner in the District 2 race will serve a two-year term. In the race for the other Latah County Commission seat up for election this year, incumbent Republican Tony Johnson, who voters first elected in 2024, will face Democrat Carol Wells in the general election. The winner of that race will serve a four-year term. Republican Commissioner Jason Stukes has 2 years remaining in his four-year term. In other Latah County candidacy filings, incumbent Republican County Clerk Julie Fry will face Democrat Shannon May, and incumbent County Treasurer Democrat B.J. Swanson will face Republican Peggy Gottschalk in a rematch of the 2022 Treasurer's race. The winner of the Clerk and Treasurer's races will serve four-year terms. Only one candidate filed in the assessors and coroner's race. Republican incumbent David Sutherland filed for the county assessor's seat, and Democrat Debbie Karskalin filed for the coroner's seat. Facing no opposition, Karskalin will likely take over the coroner's office from Democrat Kathy Maybutt next January. Flooding impacted the region late Friday and early Saturday as an atmospheric river dumped 2 to 3 inches of rain on the region. Clearwater County was among the hardest hit areas, with multiple landslides closing 30 miles of U.S. Highway 12 between Arrow Bridge and Orofino for a time Saturday. The Lewiston Tribune reports by Saturday evening transportation officials were using a pilot car to guide vehicles through part of the highway between Orofino and Lenore, where only one lane was open. The Lewiston Tribune reports an 8-foot wall of rock and water slammed into a parked Orofino Joint School District bus Saturday at a depot near the high school, destroying it. School officials were able to move another 14 buses parked at the depot before the wall of water hit. Clearwater County Sheriff Chris Goetz said the destroyed bus was an alternate and school bus service in the school district would not be affected this week. Clearwater County Emergency Management Officer Don Gardner said rock slides occurred Saturday on Grangemont and Dent Bridge Roads, as well as Bobbitt Bench Road, Sunnyside Bench Road, and Old Peck Grade. Major streets in Pullman were closed for part of the day Saturday. The South Fork of the Palouse River crested at 8.8 feet between 6 and 7 a.m. Saturday. Police also closed Grand Avenue between Nye and Ritchie Streets near Cougar Country Drive-In at about 3 a.m. Saturday. The road was reopened as water receded later Saturday. Police closed all lanes of East Main Street in downtown Pullman for a time Saturday, and retail businesses along Main Street pumped and swept out water from their stores. Social media posts showed several inches of water in some shops. The Pine Street pedestrian bridge pivoted off its abutments at noon Saturday, as it was designed to do. Pullman City Administrator Sean Wells said it's unknown when the pedestrian bridge will be usable again. Wells said a number of businesses were damaged by the flood, but no buildings were destroyed. In Moscow, Paradise Creek rose to nearly 2 feet above flood stage early Saturday. The bike path and Guy Wicks Field on the University of Idaho campus were under several inches of water, and police closed part of Perimeter Drive near the Kibbe Dome for a time Saturday. The parking lot of Spence Hardware near Paradise Creek was flooded for a time. Moscow Fire Chief Brian Nickerson said there were no reports of extensive damage in the city due to the flooding. In Whitman County, the Washington Transportation Department reported State Route 194 was reduced to a single lane Saturday near Hamilton Hill Road, about 5 miles west of Pullman, due to a washout. The mayor of Julietta declared a state of emergency for the city park, saying the gates of the park were closed and locked as of Saturday. Photos showed park playground equipment underwater there.
While overall rates of opioid overdose in the state have decreased in recent years, data from the Washington Department of Health shows rates in American Indian and Alaska Native communities continue to increase and are almost double that of other populations. The state has been taking a number of measures to address the problem, including supplying thousands of doses of naloxone to community organizations, local governments, and tribes since 2019. Jen Olson with the American Indian Health Commission says while the data still paints a grim picture, having naloxone available has helped Native communities normalize talking about addiction.
There are things we can do along the way of addiction and helping somebody when they're not quite ready to go to treatment. We can at least make sure that we have naloxone out there and the community knows about it and they know how to use it to prevent an accidental death from an opioid.
Naloxone reverses overdoses by knocking opioids off brain receptors and blocking them from reattaching. The effects are temporary, so anyone experiencing overdose should get immediate medical attention. Emily Hirio with the Washington State Department of Health says nasal naloxone, also known as Narcan, is effective, safe, and available to anyone over the counter.
Naloxone reverses any type of opioid overdose, whether that's fentanyl or carfentanil or other synthetic opioids. If people have naloxone and they think they are seeing an opioid overdose, they should absolutely administer it.
Hirio adds naloxone is safe for people of all ages, including infants, pregnant people, and older adults. She says rural residents can order the medication through the mail from the Department of Health, and the state also has a map online to help people find free naloxone near them. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
Far-right organizer James Beau Greitz has died at the age of 87 at his home in Nevada. An obituary in the New York Times reported Greitz's wife Judy announced the death of the ex-Green Beret, who tried to start what he called a constitutional covenant community near Kamiai in rural Idaho County in the 1990s. Greitz, who claimed he was an inspiration for the movie Rambo, was part of the right-wing movement that operated on the fringe of American politics in the 1980s and the 1990s. He had a daily radio show on AM radio and a newsletter. He helped negotiate an end to the Ruby Ridge standoff between Boundary County resident Randy Weaver and the FBI in 1992. Greitz ran for president that year on the Populist Party ticket. Greitz was living in Nevada when he and his then-wife Claudia purchased property near Woodland in Idaho County to promote as a place for what he called freedom-loving people who wanted to escape urban city life and what he said were overbearing government regulations. The Lewiston Tribune reports residents set up homes at what was known as the Almost Heaven development in the mid-1990s, but residents later said they did not like attempts to establish basic forest services like snow plowing and said they did not sign up for a cult. Greitz survived a suicide attempt in 1998 after he tried to reconcile with his estranged wife at Lumberjack Days in Orofino, and when he did not succeed, he drove to a location on State Highway 7 where he shot himself in the chest with a Colt 45. Greitz wrote he was surprised he survived and attributed his survival to medals he was wearing. He then returned to Nevada where he remarried and continued to be active in far-right politics. The Moscow City Council will be asked tonight to adopt the Paradise Creek Maintenance Program Plan. The Paradise Creek Maintenance Program Plan would establish a structured, adaptive framework for routine maintenance, capital improvements, regulatory coordination, beaver management, and public engagement to address regulatory requirements, enhance flood risk mitigation and infrastructure protection, and preserve habitat and riparian function. The council will also vote on approving a memorandum of understanding with Latah County saying the city would pay for half of a proposed mass notification system to inform residents about emergency situations. The council will also hear the annual comprehensive financial report presentation from City Assistant Finance Director Renee Tack and Nick Nicholson of the auditing firm Presnell Gage. The council will also hear a report on the Idaho Transportation Department's U.S. Highway 95 Palouse Region Study from Janet Zarate of the ITD's District 2 office. The council will also hear a Citizen Commission report on the Planning and Zoning Commission from City Planner Mike Ray and Commission Chair Dennis Wilson. The Moscow City Council will meet at 7 p.m. tonight at City Hall. And that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, 20% chance of rain before 8 p.m., otherwise mostly cloudy, low 42. 30% chance of rain tomorrow, mainly in the afternoon, cloudy, high 57. South winds 5 to 10, becoming southwest in the afternoon, gusts up to 20. 30% chance of rain Tuesday night, mainly before midnight, mostly cloudy, low 45. And a 20% chance of rain Wednesday, mostly cloudy, high 62. South winds 5 to 15, becoming southwest in the afternoon, gusts up to 20. Currently 46 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Flashpoints is up next. Bex will be starting to play music around 7:30 with Spotlight, and Chia Pets in 9 to 11 to play music for you at 11 o'clock. Nardwar, the Human Serviette radio show. Stay tuned for more.
Love's Kombucha is proud to support KRFP Radio Free Moscow. Love's Kombucha is a fun, lively, fermented probiotic tea that is craft brewed right here in Moscow. For more information, visit loveskombucha.com.
Programming on KRFP is also sponsored by Palouse Prairie Charter School, an EL Education accredited expeditionary learning model school serving Northern Idaho students in grades K through 8. PPCS is a free public charter school that combines hands-on learning, rigorous academics, outdoor adventure, and character development. PalouseProrieSchool.org.
KRFP, Moscow.